Today we'll be talking about heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, what works and what doesn't. So what is special about this heart failure with preserved ejection fraction? Number one, diagnosis is difficult. Number two, it is highly prevalent. Approximately 50% patients of heart failure are heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. And the proportion of patients reported is 22 to 73% in various studies. This figure has been taken from ESC guidelines of heart failure in 2016. And what are the differences with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction? So patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction are older, they are more commonly women, they are more likely to have a history of hypertension, more commonly have atrial fibrillation, and they less commonly have myocardial infarction. How do we define heart failure with preserved ejection fraction? It has been defined as presence of signs and symptoms with ejection fraction more than 50%, elevated natriuretic peptide with either presence of structural heart disease or diastolic dysfunction. Cutoff for the ejection fraction for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction has been a matter of debate, and this was first solved by ESC 2016 guidelines, and later on in the 2021 universal definition of heart failure, it has been again re-emphasized that heart failure with preserved ejection fraction has to be defined as ejection fraction more than 50%. There are multiple comorbidities which may be present in patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and they include hypertension. It may be present in 80 to 90% patients. Diabetes, it may be present in 20 to 30% patients. Obesity may be present in 30 to 50% patients. Current atrial fibrillation may be present in approximately 1/3 patients. History of atrial fibrillation may be present in half of the patients. CKD may be seen in majority of patients. Coronary artery disease may be present in 20 to 40% patients. Obstructive sleep apnea and pulmonary hypertension may also be seen. What are the treatment options which are available for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction? It is a difficult to treat disease. Not many options are available. So I've classified the options as follows. Firstly, non-pharmacological management. It includes weight loss or exercise. Weight loss can be by hypocaloric diet, by physical activity, anti-obesity drugs, or bariatric surgery. Then we have device therapy. Device therapy may include cardioMEMS, interatrial septal device, splanchnic deep denervation, which can be surgical or catheter-based, the renal denervation for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and catheter ablation for atrial fibrillation. Then the drug therapy, which can be used for patients of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, can be divided as drugs which have shown definitive benefits, such as diuretics, antihypertensives, antidiabetics, TTR stabilizers for amyloid cardiomyopathy, mavacamten for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or spironolactone. Then there are drugs which have negative or neutral trial or evidence. These include ARBs, ACE inhibitors, beta blockers, ARNI, eplerenone, digoxin, ivabradine, virasiguat, nitrates. Then there are certain drugs which are under trial, and these seem to be promising. These include antifibrotic drug pirfenidone and SGLT2 inhibitors. Diuretics. Diuretic therapy is the mainstay of the treatment for heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, especially in the patients with volume overload. Diuretic therapy should be administered with caution to avoid excessive preload reduction and risk of hypotension. So won't it be nicer if we had some hemodynamic parameter guiding the dose of diuretics? So that facility is available. CardioMEMS. So CardioMEMS is a wireless sensor. It is designed for permanent implantation into distal pulmonary artery. It functions as a remote Swan-Ganz catheter. It is meant to monitor changes in pulmonary artery pressure. And the data obtained from this can be used to modify heart failure treatment. It can detect the changes in the pulmonary artery pressure 3 weeks before the heart failure hospitalization. And the dose of diuretic can be titrated as per the data obtained from the CardioMEMS. The device has been approved by FDA in 2014, and it is indicated for both heart failure with preserved ejection fraction and heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. It is indicated in patients with NYHA3 functional status with history of heart failure hospitalization in last 1 year. The device is to be avoided in patients who are unable to tolerate 1 month of dual antiplatelet therapy or who have any contraindication to right heart catheterization. Patients with recent pulmonary embolism or deep vein thrombosis, active infection, congenital heart disease, prosthetic heart valve, coagulopathy, and recent CRTD implantation, they are also not advised to undergo this CardioMEMS implantation. Post-procedure, patient is supposed to take 1 month of DAPT, dual antiplatelet therapy, followed by aspirin for life. The evidence of benefits from CardioMEMS comes from this CHAMPION trial. The CHAMPION trial was a prospective, single-blinded, randomized controlled trial. It tested the hypothesis that hemodynamically guided heart failure management decreases decompensation leading to hospitalization. A total of 550 patients were enrolled in the study, and half of it were managed by hemodynamic guidance and half of it were managed by usual care. Out of these 550 patients, 119 patients had an ejection fraction of more than 40%. The authors concluded that hemodynamically guided management of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction reduced decompensation leading to hospitalization compared with the standard management strategies. GUIDE-HF is currently ongoing. It is a large trial. It is meant to evaluate the role of CardioMEMS in heart failure hospitalization, quality of life, and functional capacity in patients who are in NYHA 2 to 4 functional status with elevated natriuretic peptides. Weight loss. Obesity is an important comorbidity in patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. For every 5 kg per meter square increment in the BMI, the relative risk of heart failure incidence is 1.41. For every 10 cm increase in waist circumference, the relative risk of heart failure increases by 1.29. Intentional weight loss has been shown to have significant favorable impact on patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. This can result from either diet or physical activity, bariatric surgery, or a combination. So all of these are effective. It has to be remembered that very rapid weight loss can paradoxically increase the mortality risk. Next question arises, how can a heart failure with preserved ejection fraction HFpEF patient lose weight? The correct answer is any modality, whether it is calorie restriction or exercise training or drug therapy or bariatric surgery, anyone can be chosen. Calorie restriction is a dietary intervention that aims at 25% reduction of metabolic requirements from baseline values. Calorie 1 study showed that 6 months of calorie restriction decreases the body weight in overweight, healthy, sedentary, middle-aged men and premenopausal women. Although aerobic type exercise is usually recommended as a primary approach of exercise in patients for weight loss, it is really unknown if it is really beneficial to resistance training or not. A trial was done to ascertain whether calorie restriction or exercise, which two modalities, diet or exercise, is better for weight loss in patients with HFpEF. So 100 participants were chosen and they were divided into 4 groups: exercise group, diet plus exercise group, and control. Patients were followed for 20 weeks. The authors concluded that among obese patients who were clinically stable and having HFpEF, calorie restriction or aerobic exercise both increased peak VO2, and the effects may be additive. So what about the drugs? FIGHT trial and STEP 1 trial have shown that liraglutide and semaglutide can be used for weight loss. Semaglutide has been approved by FDA as a weight loss drug in non-diabetic obese patients also. The other drugs for weight loss include orlistat, lorsaquerine, and a combination of fenfluramine with topiramate, and a combination of bupropion with naltrexone. Of these, fenfluramine is contraindicated in patients with heart failure. The safety of orlistat has been established in patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. There are no studies of orlistat in HFpEF patients. Lorcaserine has been tested in Camilla Timi 61 trial, and it has been found that it promotes weight loss without increasing the major adverse cardiovascular effect. Bariatric surgery is the most reliable intervention for weight loss. It is approved for patients with BMI more than 40 or BMI more than 35 plus an obesity-related comorbidity. Bariatric surgery in obese patients with heart failure has been shown to improve symptoms and NYHA classification, as well as it decreases heart failure readmissions and promotes reverse LV remodeling. What about exercise? Exercise has been tested in ex-DHF pilot study, in which a small group of HFpEF patients were prescribed a structured supervised exercise training, and it was shown that exercise improves functional capacity, diastolic functions, and quality of life. However, the long-term effects of exercise training in HFpEF patients is unknown. So there is a larger trial, ex-DHF trial. It is assessing the long-term effects of supervised exercise training programs on different outcomes, which include all-cause mortality, hospitalizations, NYHA functional class, maximal exercise capacity, and diastolic functions. Mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. So why did we think of mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist as a HFpEF drug? So mineralocorticoid antagonists have been found to reduce mortality and symptoms in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction by improving LV remodeling, decreasing myocyte necrosis, and consequent fibrosis. They have also been found to modify the inflammatory response associated with heart failure. RAS act system activation and LV remodeling have a role in pathophysiology of HFpEF as well. By reducing cardiac fibrosis, aldosterone antagonists have potential role to be beneficial in HFpEF patients. There are multiple trials in which they have been tested. We'll go through them. ALDO-DHF trial. The ALDO-DHF trial of spironolactone. The ALDO-DHF trial was a multicentric, prospective, randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trial. It aimed to assess the safety and efficacy of long-term spironolactone in patients with HFpEF. The primary objective of the trial was to determine whether spironolactone is superior to placebo in improving diastolic functions and maximal exercise capacity in HFpEF patients. It enrolled 422 patients in NYHA 2 to 3 functional class with more than equal to 50% ejection fraction. Patients were randomly assigned to spironolactone 25 mg or a matching placebo. Patients were followed up for 12 months and it was found that spironolactone improved LV diastolic functions on echocardiography. It caused reverse remodeling. It improved neuroendocrine activation, that is, it decreased the natriuretic peptide level, but it did not affect maximal exercise capacity or quality of life. Then came the landmark TOPCAT trial. The TOPCAT trial was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial, and approximately 3,500 patients from American and European countries were, Eastern European countries were enrolled. Patients with more than equal to 45% ejection fraction with signs and symptoms of heart failure were included in the study. There was no difference in spironolactone and placebo in terms of primary outcome, which was composite of cardiovascular death, aborted cardiac arrest, and heart failure hospitalization. When the secondary outcomes were analyzed, heart failure hospitalizations were significantly lower in patients of spironolactone, and this finding was hypothesis generated. There was statistically significant reduction in mortality for women, and they constituted approximately 50% of the total included patients. This again was hypothesis generating. Overall, the trialists concluded that spironolactone is not superior to placebo in improving cardiovascular outcomes in HFpEF patients. There was significantly higher risk of hyperkalemia and renal failure in patients treated with spironolactone. Then came this post hoc analysis of TOPCAT. In this post hoc analysis of TOPCAT, it was found that there was an unusually large difference in the event rate in the placebo group of the Eastern Europe, that is Russia and Georgia, as compared to American patients. Patients from Russia and Georgia were younger. They were less likely to have atrial fibrillation or diabetes mellitus, but they were more likely to have myocardial infarction or heart failure hospitalization. They were more likely to have lower ejection fraction and serum creatinine and higher diastolic blood pressure. The population from Russia and Georgia constituted 49% of the trial population. The post hoc analysis found that for Russian and Georgian patients, the trial was negative. That is, spironolactone did not have any benefits in these patients. However, in the Americans, the rate of primary outcomes, that is, cardiovascular death and heart failure hospitalizations, were significantly decreased with spironolactone. This led the investigators to believe if TOPCAT patients in Russia and Georgia actually had the HFpEF or even a fraction of them received spironolactone or not. So newer studies such as the German prospective SPIRIT-HF trial and the large registry randomized controlled SPIRIT-HF trial will reevaluate this role of spironolactone in HFpEF patients. Eplerenone. Eplerenone has shown promise in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction in EPHESUS and EMPHASIS-HF trial. Whether it can benefit HFpEF patients was tested in RAM-PF trial. It was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial of 44 patients with HFpEF. After 6 months of treatment, patients were monitored for changes in 6-minute walk distance, diastolic functions, and biomarkers of collagen turnover. The authors found that eplerenone did not cause an improvement in exercise capacity. However, it was associated with significant reduction in markers of collagen turnover. So, blood pressure control. Based on the results of SPRINT trial and HOPE-3 trial, the 2017 ACC-AHA guidelines on management of heart failure, they said that patients of HFpEF should be prescribed GDMT to attain a systolic blood pressure of less than or equal to 130 mmHg. There is limited data to guide the choice of antihypertensives in the setting of HFpEF patients. Nevertheless, RAS inhibition with ACE inhibitor, ARBs, MRAs, and ARNI should be the preferred choice. Then came the optimized HF study. This study found that systolic blood pressure of less than equal to 120 is associated with poorer outcomes in patients with HFpEF. So what about ACE inhibitors? ACE inhibitors have been backbone of heart failure with reduced ejection fraction treatment after the result of consensus 1, SALT RX and SALT ASX trial. However, there is no evidence from randomized clinical studies that ACE inhibitor therapy improves overall mortality or morbidity in HFpEF patients. The clinical efficacy of ACE inhibitor in HFpEF was assessed in PEP-CHF trial. In this trial, patients who had diastolic dysfunctions were enrolled. 80% of these patients had a history of hypertension. They were randomly assigned to an ACE inhibitor or a placebo. Overall, there was no impact of ACE inhibitor on the primary endpoint. Despite the overall neutral trial, ACE inhibitors play an important role in the treatment of disease process that contributes to development of HFpEF, namely hypertension, coronary artery disease, diabetes, and CKD. ACE inhibitors are beneficial in hypertensive heart disease. The reduction in systemic pressures can theoretically lead to regression of LVH and gradual improvement in diastolic functions. Angiotensin receptor blockers have shown their benefit in HFrEF in Valhef and CHARM trials. However, there is no evidence from randomized studies that suggests that ARBs directly affect the mortality or morbidity in HFpEF. Two large randomized controlled trials have been conducted using ARBs in HFpEF patients, and these are CHARM-PRESERVE trial and I-PRESERVE trial. In the CHARM-PRESERVE trial, 3,000 patients with heart failure, NYHA2 or NYHA3, with ejection fraction more than equal to 40% and controlled blood pressure were randomized to either candesartan or placebo. After a median follow-up period of 37 months, there was a small and almost significant difference in the incidence of primary endpoints of cardiovascular death in heart failure hospitalizations that was entirely due to decrease in heart failure hospitalizations with candesartan. However, the HFpEF patients enrolled in CHARM-PRESERVE trial do not represent the HFpEF patients present in the community. The CHARM-PRESERVE trial had more male patients, and these patients had more of mildly depressed EF. The trial has concluded that candesartan had a moderate impact in preventing heart failure hospitalizations in HFpEF patients. Similarly, in the I-PRESERVE trial, 4,000 patients were enrolled, and all of these patients were NYHA2 or NYHA3, had controlled blood pressure, ejection fraction more than 45%, and these patients were assigned to irbesartan 300 mg or placebo. After a median follow-up period of 49.5 months, and there was no significant difference in the primary endpoint of death from any cause or cardiovascular hospitalizations. There was also no significant difference in secondary outcomes, that is, death, heart failure hospitalizations, heart failure from any cause, or hospitalization due to a cardiovascular cause, or quality of life was not different between the placebo and irbesartan. Overall, it was again a neutral trial. The trial is concluded that irbesartan did not improve the outcomes in HFpEF patients. Then we have the established benefits of ARNI in HFrEF. What do they do in HFpEF patients? Paramount 2 was a phase 2 randomized double-blind multicentric trial in HFpEF patients who had ejection fraction of more than or equal to 45% and were in NYHA2 to NYHA3 functional status and had an NT-proBNP more than 400. Patients were randomized to ARNI and placebo in 1:1 fashion. The trial found that NT-proBNP was more significantly decreased with the ARNI. Encouraged by the findings of Paramount HF trial, the Paragon HF trial was started. It was a phase 3 trial. Patients with ejection fraction more than or equal to 45% patients were enrolled, and approximately 4,800 patients were enrolled in the trial. Patients were divided into two groups. One group received valsartan and the other group received ARNI, and the primary outcome was cardiovascular death and heart failure hospitalizations. Overall, there was no significant difference between the two groups in terms of primary outcomes. That is, the composite of cardiovascular death and heart failure hospitalization was not different between the placebo and the ARNI group. There was a modest, although statistically non-significant, lower rate of hospitalizations for heart failure with the ARNI as compared to placebo. ARNI also decreased NT-proBNP more than the placebo. Patients taking ARNI were more likely to have improvement in NYHA function class and quality of life as assessed by Kansas City cardiomyopathy questionnaire. They were less likely to have worsening renal functions. ARNI was associated with a reduction of primary outcome in women, but not in men. However, the women derived less symptomatic benefits from the drug. Overall, it was a negative trial, and the authors concluded that the drug did not result in lower rate of hospitalizations and death from cardiovascular causes in HFpEF patients. Multiple sub-analyses of this trial have been published, and most of them have not found any significant benefits with ARNI. In the context of these sub-analyses of ARNI in HFpEF, it is important to remember a popular quote by Ronald H. Coase: "If you torture the data enough, it will confess." Parallax trial came approximately a year after Paragon-HF. Approximately 2,500 patients of HFpEF, that is ejection fraction more than or equal to 40%, in NYHA 2 to 4 functional class and raised NT-proBNP were included in the study. How was this trial different from Paragon-HF? There were two key differences. First, the comparator was different, and secondly, the outcome variables were different from Paragon-HF. The trial compared ARNI to whatever the patient was on, that is, if they were taking an ACE inhibitor, the ARNI was compared to an ACE inhibitor. If they were taking an ARB, ARNI was compared with ARB. And if they were taking nothing, ARNI was compared to a placebo in these patients. Approximately 2,500 patients were randomized to ARNI or whatever the patients were taking in terms of for their heart failure. Patients were randomly assigned to either of the three strata: sacubitril valsartan twice daily versus enalapril in patients who were on ACE inhibitors, sacubitril valsartan versus valsartan in patients who were on ARB, and sacubitril valsartan versus placebo in patients who were not taking any. The primary endpoint of the trial was a reduction in NT-proBNP and change in 6-minute walk distance. The Parallax trial showed a significant reduction in NT-proBNP on a magnitude that was similar to Paragon-HF or the Paramount trials, maybe a bit less, but it did not show any benefit in terms of 6-minute walk distance. Also, it did not show any benefits in Kansas City cardiomyopathy questionnaire. In the Paragon-HF trial, we found that there was some benefit in the patients who were started ARNI very early after their index hospitalizations. So this is why this Paraglide-HF trial was started. It is presently ongoing. It is testing the benefits of ARNI in HFpEF patients who recently had an acute decompensation. Calcium channel blockers. Calcium channel blockers may be useful in treatment of hypertension in patients with HFpEF. However, the evidence we have is very limited. This class of medicine is usually used as a third line or fourth line antihypertensive in HFpEF patients with severe hypertension. In patients with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy with HFpEF, verapamil may improve symptoms because of LVOT obstruction. What about beta blockers? Beta blockers have been found to be highly effective drugs for HFrEF, that is heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, in MERIT-HF trial, Copernicus trial, and CEBIS trials. Many patients with HFpEF use beta blockers for some or the other reason. It is said that more than 60% patients of HFpEF are on beta blockers, and 60% of these patients have a compelling indication, that is, they may have arrhythmia, they may have myocardial infarction. In Paragon-HF trial, which was a recent large HFpEF trial, about 80% patients were on beta blockers. On the other hand, the evidence of benefit with beta blockers in HFpEF patients is lacking. Multiple trials have been conducted with various beta blockers, and none of them have found any benefits of beta blockers in HFpEF patients. These include nebivolol, which has been studied in ELANS study and seniors trial, bisoprolol, which has been studied in CEBIS ELD trial, and carvedilol, which has been studied in JDHF trial. The Swedish study had demonstrated an unexpected worsening in heart failure symptoms in patients who were started beta blockers. In a recent article published in European Heart Journal titled "Beta Blockers for Heart Failure with Reduced, Mid-Range and Preserved Ejection Fraction, an Individual Patient-Level Analysis of Double-Blind Randomized Trial," it was commented that for patients with baseline EF less than or equal to 40%, beta blocker therapy significantly reduced all-cause mortality. Beta blockers also reduce cardiovascular death in these subset of patients. For patients with baseline EF of 40 to 49%, all-cause mortality was nominally but not statistically significantly lower with beta blocker therapy. beta blocker therapy significantly reduced cardiovascular death in these subset of patients. For patients with baseline LVEF of 50% or more, beta blocker therapy, they did not reduce all-cause mortality or cardiovascular death. What about renal denervation? Renal sympathetic denervation can be offered for patients with HFpEF and uncontrolled arterial hypertension. A single-center retrospective study has found that HFpEF patients undergoing renal denervation showed better or improved NT-proBNP, and they showed decreased LV stiffness after renal denervation. These findings imply that renal denervation may be a potential therapeutic strategy for arterial hypertension and HFpEF. Antidiabetics for diabetes control. Diabetes mellitus in HFpEF is associated with poor functional status, poor exercise capacity, and increased markers of inflammation, increased fibrosis, and more endothelial dysfunction. It is also associated with higher LV filling pressures and increased mortality and increased heart failure admissions. How to optimally lower down the blood sugar levels in these patients? So there are three answers to it: calorie restriction, SGLT2 inhibitors, and GLP-1 receptor antagonist. Firstly, the calorie restriction. Calorie restriction may have beneficial effects on inflammation by reducing adiposity in HFpEF patients with diabetes mellitus. Then SGLT2 inhibitors. So we have had results from the CANVAS trial. It was published in 2019 in Circulation by the heading Effects of Canagliflozin on Heart Failure Outcomes Associated with Preserved and Reduced Ejection Fraction. The data showed that canagliflozin reduced fatal or hospitalized heart failure events compared to placebo in both heart failure with reduced ejection fraction and heart failure with preserved ejection fraction population. Also, recently there was the data from this SOLOIST WHF trial and SCORE trial in which sotagliflozin was compared to placebo in heart failure with diabetes mellitus patients. In the pooled analysis of SCORE and SOLOIST WHF trial, benefits were seen irrespective of baseline ejection fraction and history of heart failure. It is important to remember that these trials were terminated early and approximately 80% of these patients were HFrEF. That leaves us with a very small sample size, and it is difficult to draw any firm conclusions regarding the use of SGLT2 inhibitors from these data. So what do we do now? Many trials of SGLT2 inhibitors in HFpEF are ongoing. DELIVER-HF is the largest RCT of SGLT2 inhibitors in HFpEF, and it is studying 6,200 patients with ejection fraction of more than or equal to 40% with NYHA 2 to 4 functional class. It is the largest trial in HFpEF till date. For context, PARAGON-HF, which was a recently published trial, had 4,800 patients only. In this trial, patients are going to receive dapagliflozin 10 mg versus placebo, and the primary outcome is the composite of cardiovascular death, heart failure hospitalization, and urgent heart failure visit. The EMPEROR PRESERVE trial is again looking at the same subset of patients, that is ejection fraction more than or equal to 40% and NYHA 2 to 4 functional status. Again, the primary outcome in this trial is composite of cardiovascular death or heart failure hospitalizations. There are some other trials of SGLT2 inhibitors which are going on. These include EMBRACE-HF trial. It is studying empagliflozin. The other include the ERADICATE trial. It is studying artugliflozin, and PRESERVED-HF trial, which is studying dapagliflozin. GLP-1 receptor agonist or glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist. These are antidiabetics and they reduce atherosclerotic burden, they decrease inflammation, and they reduce endothelial dysfunction. Animal studies have shown that GLP-1 treatment improves survival in rats with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, most likely by reducing LV stiffness, improving diastolic dysfunction, and decreasing pulmonary congestion. However, the trials of GLP-1 agonist have not shown any benefit of these drugs in terms of heart failure hospitalizations. Mind you, these drugs have been shown to have a safer cardiovascular outcome profile. These drugs have been shown that they are cardiovascular safe in the respective trials, but there has not been any effect on heart failure hospitalizations. And these trials include LEADER trial for liraglutide, SUSTAIN-6 and PIONEER-6 trial for semaglutide, ELIXA trial for lixisenatide, HARMONY trial for LB glutide. So, atrial fibrillation in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. Atrial fibrillation is the most common arrhythmia in heart failure, irrespective of ejection fraction. Atrial fibrillation in patients with HFpEF is associated with more symptoms, is associated with worse quality of life, and higher mortality and morbidity. Both rate-controlled and rhythm-controlled strategies can be used for control of atrial fibrillation in patients with HFpEF. First, we'll talk about the rate-controlled strategy. As per the 2020 ESC guidelines for management of atrial fibrillation, the optimal heart rate in AF patients with heart failure remains unclear, but what they recommend is a target of 100 to 110 beats per minute that is supposed to be optimal. Pharmacological rate control strategies are different for patients with HFpEF and HFrEF. Beta blockers, diltiazem, verapamil, and digoxin, all these are viable options for HFpEF. Whereas beta blockers and digoxin, these are the only two drugs which we can use in HFrEF. Amiodarone can be considered for rate control in HFpEF, but only in acute setting. In case we have planned a rate control strategy and all the drugs have failed, we can go for AV nodal ablation with permanent pacemaker implantation. What about the rhythm control in atrial fibrillation? The strategy of rate control was compared with rhythm control in HFpEF patients using the data from Get with the Guidelines Heart Failure Registry, GWTG-HF registry. The results were published in JAHA, and it was found that rhythm control in HFpEF patients with AF was associated with lower risk of 1 year all-cause mortality. Rhythm control may be any of the following: use of antiarrhythmic drugs, cardioversion, AF ablation, or atrial fibrillation surgery. What about catheter ablation of atrial fibrillation in HFpEF patients? Few small studies and a meta-analysis have shown the safety and efficacy of pulmonary vein isolation in atrial fibrillation with HFpEF patients. Pulmonary vein isolation in AF with HFpEF patients has been found to induce reverse remodeling, improvement of symptoms, resolution of HFpEF, and reduced heart failure hospitalization. The STALL-AF HFpEF study found that restoration and maintenance of sinus rhythm in atrial fibrillation with HFpEF improves hemodynamics and reduces BNP and reduces symptoms. The AMPERE study is a prospective, non-blinded, randomized pilot study, and it is ongoing. It aims to compare the effect of pulmonary vein isolation against medical management of atrial fibrillation in patients with HFpEF. The study is estimated to be completed in 2025. So recently in June 2021, there was an article in Heart. It was published for management of atrial fibrillation in heart failure patients. What they said was, in HFpEF patients, for management of atrial fibrillation, you have to assess and treat the risk factors and comorbidities by using ACE inhibitors, ARBs, MRAs, that is ACE inhibitors, angiotensin receptor blockers, mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, and statins in patients with risk factor. LV hypertrophy or LV dysfunction has to be treated. Secondly, you have to discuss the medical therapy or catheter ablation with the patient. What the article recommend was that amiodarone, dronedarone, and sotalol, these three drugs can be used for rhythm control in patients with HFpEF. Amiodarone and dronedarone are class 1A recommendation by this article, and sotalol was class 2B. Catheter ablation as a first line therapy in such patients was class 2A, and after failure of drug therapy, recommended that it is class 1 recommendation. Digoxin. In the late 90s, the DISH trial came out, and it showed that digoxin did not reduce mortality in heart failure patients. However, it was able to decrease the hospitalizations for heart failure in both HFpEF and HFrEF patients. It can be considered a potential treatment to control tachyarrhythmias in patients with HFpEF. So, soluble guanylyl cyclase stimulators, vericiguat, praliciguat, and riociguat are soluble guanylyl cyclase stimulator. The recently presented Victoria trial has led to vericiguat being approved as a drug for HFrEF. Soluble guanylyl cyclase stimulators have also been used in management of pulmonary hypertension. will they benefit HFpEF patients is still to be seen. Verasigvat, there is definitive evidence of benefit in HFrEF in Victoria trial. And in HFpEF patients, this trial was done. It was called Vitality HFpEF trial. It was published in JAMA in 2020. The trial assessed the efficacy of Verasigvat, which is an oral soluble guanyl cyclase stimulator. The trial enrolled the patients with ejection fraction more than equal to 45% with NYHA 2 to 3 functional class with raised natriuretic peptide with history of recent decompensation. Patients were followed up for 24 weeks, and after 24 weeks, it was found that the drug did not improve the physical limitation score of KCCQ or Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire. Then there was the drug Praliciguat. The effect of Praliciguat on peak rate of oxygen consumption in HFpEF patients was tested in this Capacity HFpEF trial. It was also published in JAMA in 2020. It was again a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled phase 2 trial. Close to 200 patients were enrolled with ejection fraction of more than equal to 40%. These patients were supposed to have at least two of the following conditions, that is diabetes, hypertension, obesity, or advanced age. Patients received 12 weeks of treatment with praliciguat or placebo, and after 12 weeks it was found that praliciguat compared to placebo did not significantly improve peak VO2 from baseline. Overall, the trial was neutral. Then what about riociguat? The dynamic study is a 26-week randomized double-blind multicentric phase 2 trial. It is testing the efficacy of long-term riociguat in patients with HFpEF with pulmonary hypertension, and the trial is ongoing. We are awaiting the results. Now, about the interatrial shunt device, IASD. Corvia atrial shunt device, this is a novel transcatheter implant. It is meant to reduce the elevated left atrial pressure. The elevated left atrial pressures are the primary cause of heart failure symptoms in HFpEF patients. The principle behind this is creation of an iatrogenic atrial septal defect. The shunt is not big. The QPQS is in the range of 1.2 to 1.3. The shunt operates from left to right and helps in decompressing the left atrium. The reduced LAP-HF1 trial, it was a phase 2 randomized blinded trial. It was conducted in HFpEF patients with NYHA functional class 3 or ambulatory class 4 heart failure patients. 44 patients were enrolled, and at 1 month, interatrial septal device patients were found to have significant reduction in pulmonary capillary wedge pressure. The authors concluded that in patients with heart failure and ejection fraction of more than or equal to 40%, interatrial septal device treatment reduces pulmonary capillary wedge pressure during exercise. The reduced LAP-HF2 trial is the world's first prospective randomized sham-controlled trial to evaluate the effect of this Corvia IASD device in more than 600 patients. This trial is going to assess the effect of the device on quality of life, heart failure symptoms, and heart failure hospitalizations. Perfenidone. What we know that perfenidone is an antifibrotic drug, and it is used in the treatment of lung fibrosis. And what we understand about HFpEF is that fibrosis in the myocardium is responsible for the diastolic abnormality. So it was postulated that antifibrotic drugs could be useful in such pathology. So came the PURIT study. The PURIT trial examined whether perfenidone resulted in regression of myocardial fibrosis in HFpEF patients with myocardial fibrosis. It was a randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled phase 2 trial in which 94 patients with ejection fraction of more than or equal to 45% with elevated natriuretic peptides were enrolled. Patients underwent cardiac MRI, and those with evidence of myocardial fibrosis were randomized to receive perfenidone or placebo for a period of 52 weeks. After the follow-up period, the patients in the perfenidone group were found to have lesser fibrosis, lower NT-proBNP. However, there was no improvement in the diastolic functions or atrial size or atrial functions or RV size or RV functions. So interesting times are ahead for perfenidone in this group of patients. Evobridine. So why do we want to give ibapridine in heart failure? We want to reduce the heart rate. Why do we want to reduce the heart rate? Because some studies have shown that elevated heart rate is associated with higher cardiovascular mortality in HFpEF patients. So we had ibapridine, which could do the job for us and lower down the heart rate. But overall, the trials of ibapridine in HFpEF were at best neutral. Adenosine A1 agonist. So nilardenoson is a partial adenosine A1 agonist, and it has been tested in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction population. So this drug was tested in PANACH trial, and it enrolled NYHA 2 to 4 functional status patients with ejection fraction of more than equal to 45%. The primary endpoint was increase in 6-minute walk distance after for 20 weeks of treatment, and the secondary endpoints included change in duration and intensity of physical activity, NT-proBNP, highly sensitive troponin T, and quality of life. What the trial found was there was no dose-dependent changes in the primary or secondary outcome. Overall, it was again a neutral trial. Nitrates. So HFpEF patients with exercise intolerance are commonly given nitrates. The NEAT HFpEF trial was a multicentric double-blinded trial. It enrolled 110 patients with HFpEF, and they were randomized to receive isosorbide mononitrate or placebo. The trial found that HFpEF patients who received isosorbide mononitrate were less active and did not have better quality of life or submaximal exercise capacity than the patients who received placebo. It was a negative trial. Then again, we had this trial known as INDI trial. It was again testing the nitrates in HFpEF patients, and it was again a neutral trial. So many patients with HFpEF have pulmonary hypertension. Presence of pulmonary hypertension in setting of HFpEF increases symptoms, increases hospitalizations, and increases mortality in HFpEF. Drugs for pulmonary hypertension have been tried for these patients. For example, endothelin receptor antagonists have been tried in HFpEF patients with pulmonary hypertension. First, bosentan. The use of bosentan in patients of HFpEF and pulmonary hypertension was analyzed in a pilot study known as the BADHI trial. It was a multicentric, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. It aimed to investigate the clinical and hemodynamic effects of bosentan. The trial suggested that endothelin receptor blockade in HFpEF with pulmonary hypertension may not have any beneficial effects and could even be detrimental in comparison to placebo. It was a negative trial. Then we had macitentan. The role of macitentan in HFpEF with pulmonary hypertension is being evaluated in a double-blinded, multicentric, placebo-controlled trial known as the SERENADE study. The primary objective of this is to evaluate whether macitentan 10 milligrams reduces the NT-proBNP compared to placebo or not. The trial is expected to be completed soon. Prostaglandin I2 analogs. So two prostaglandin I2 analogs have been tried in patients with HFpEF and pulmonary hypertension. The ILO-HOPE trial was testing iloprost, and this trial was a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. This trial evaluated whether iloprost inhalation could improve exercise hemodynamics, that is exercise PCWP and cardiac reserve in 34 patients with HFpEF. It was found that iloprost inhalation improved hemodynamic deficits during exercise in HFpEF patients. Phase 3 SOUTHPA trial of prostacyclin analog treprostinil will enroll HFpEF patients with documented pulmonary hypertension, and it is ongoing. Sildenafil. Sildenafil was evaluated in HFpEF patients in RELAX trial, and it was compared with a placebo. 24 weeks of sildenafil compared to placebo were not found to affect 6-minute walking distance, LV remodeling, or LV diastolic functions. Many patients of HFpEF may actually be having cardiac amyloidosis. It is said that approximately 13 to 19% of HFpEF patients have got transthyretin amyloidosis, wild-type transthyretin amyloidosis. And it is important to identify these subset of patients because these patients might benefit from tafamidis. Tafamidis is an amyloid stabilizer. It binds to transthyretin and prevents tetramer dissociation and genesis of amyloid protein. We have this another special subset of HFpEF patients, that is hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy can present as HFpEF because of LVOT obstruction. Septal myectomy can relieve LVOT obstruction, leading to resolution of HFpEF. Recently, a phase 3 randomized double-blinded placebo-controlled trial, Explorer-HCM, was presented. In this trial, HCM patients with LVOT gradient of more than or equal to 50 mmHg and NYHA 2 to 3 functional class were assigned to receive mavacamten or placebo. Treatment with mavacamten improved exercise capacity, it decreased LVOT obstruction, improved NYHA functional class and health status in patients with hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy. These two modalities, septal myectomy and mavacamten, can benefit HFpEF patients due to HCM. In another study, EMBARK-HFpEF, the same drug, mavacamten, was tried in HFpEF patients with chronic elevation of cardiac troponin and NT-proBNP. It is a proof of concept study to assess the safety, tolerability and efficacy of mavacamten on biomarker levels in HFpEF patients. The study has 35 participants and is expected to be completed in 2022. So what is the role of pericardium in HFpEF? What is pericardial restraint? The pericardium exerts a compressive contact force on the surface of the heart. This force becomes exaggerated in various forms of heart failure where cardiac volumes increase. The pericardial restraint compromises the left heart filling in patients with heart failure. Pericardial restraint plays an important role in two common phenotypes of HFpEF. One is obesity-related HFpEF and second is HFpEF associated with pulmonary vascular disease. How do we target pericardial restraint in treatment of heart failure? There are two methods, direct treatment methods and indirect methods. Indirect treatment methods may include diuretics, nitrates, and regression of epicardial fat by weight loss. And the direct treatment includes resection of pericardium and anterior pericardiotomy. A pilot trial is testing this treatment approach in HFpEF. Then we have splanchnic denervation. What is the basis of splanchnic denervation in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction? The principle behind splanchnic denervation is increasing the ability of splanchnic reservoir to hold the blood and not push it to the left heart. The greater splanchnic nerve, which originates between T5 to T9, supplies the splanchnic vascular bed. The ablation strategy blocks the greater splanchnic nerve and it leads to redistribution of blood, that is more blood into the splanchnic reservoir and less blood going to the heart. For the HFpEF patients, this can cause improvement in dyspnea, improvement in exercise capacity and quality of life. So surgical greater splanchnic nerve ablation has been done and first in human study was done a few years back. In this, 10 patients with HFpEF with NYHA3 functional class and ejection fraction more than or equal to 40% were included and surgical ablation was done. 3 months after the ablation, patients had reduction in exercise PCWP compared to the baseline. The study demonstrated that greater splanchnic nerve ablation in HFpEF patients is feasible and it can cause reduction in cardiac filling pressures during exercise and it can improve quality of life and exercise capacity. Catheter blaze greater splanchnic nerve ablation. Splanchnic nerve ablation has also been attempted by endovascular method. In the first in human study of 11 patients, greater splanchnic nerve ablation for HFpEF was found to be well tolerated and it resulted in significant improvement in the NYHA functional class, quality of life and exercise capacity. Additionally, there was a significant decline in NT-proBNP levels. The REBALANCE-HF trial, it is a prospective, multicentric, randomized, sham-controlled trial. It aims to assess the safety and effectiveness of catheter-based greater splanchnic nerve ablation in HFpEF patients. The trial is expected to be completed by 2023. So more trials are coming up, more data is coming up, and the treatment of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction is evolving. and interesting times are ahead. Let's see where do we reach from here in next 1 year. That was the presentation, guys. Thank you.